Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Good decision to tune into Radical Philosophy today. I'm your host, Beth Matthews. Today on the program, I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Wendy Suter about the philosophy of fuzzy music. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Great to have you here. So, look, can you give us a bit of background information about yourself?
Well, that's tricky, seeing as of being mature years. Background information about myself. I was going to say this is a thing, like where to start. So this is where I'm kind of going. Okay, so I'm going to start in the middle of my life, which is when I was 35, I was travelling overseas and reflecting on my life. And I thought, if I don't do something about my passion for music and I'm lying on my deathbed, I will look back with regret about that. And so I came back from my travels overseas and I determined that I was actually going to go and study music composition. And that was because I'm really interested in the question about why it is that music affects people as deeply as it does.
Oh, look, you're 100% right. It's just, it is so emotional. I mean, it's one thing that can bring me to tears in a few seconds. When I hear something and it might be a bit of music from my past or just something that's really meaningful, I can just cry. And I mean, I think that's the only thing that can actually do that with me. So, yeah, you're right. It is incredibly emotional, isn't it?
It is. Well, it is. And that's the response that's what people talk about, emotion and music a lot. And I decided I would study composition, not because at that time that I felt that I had anything burning to say and I had never actually ever composed anything in my entire life at that point. So it was because I thought, well, that's what composers do. They write music. They will teach me the answer to that question, how you actually compose music that moves people. Because that's the other thing. I think a lot of people talk about music moving them and it can be emotionally, but I think the other thing that about music is that it makes people dance, like it's a physical, like there's actually a physical thing to it, or tap their toes or do something, so there's a physical element to it as well. So that's, I find that,
yeah, that's right. I mean, it makes people move, but also it makes them move emotionally, and I'd say it probably makes them makes their brains move, makes your brain work in a different way to what it normally does, because isn't it sort of something like the left side of the brain or the right side of the brain for certain things? And so it's sort of like, well, it's an all-over workout, isn't it?
Yes, it can be. Although I was thinking now, I did actually go to some treatment practitioner that I can't remember, the kinesiologist, that's the word I was thinking of. She's going, Wendy, you've got music all over your brain. We have to get rid of that. It's only supposed to be on the right side of your brain. And ever since then, I'm going, well, bring it back. Like, I'm spending all this time trying to get music to be all over my brain in, like, really deep ways. Just, and she just did it without even asking me. I was really annoyed. I'm going, I told you I was a musician. Like, that's just, anyway.
Oh, that's right. Well, she can't take that away from you. Yes.
So when I said that I've never composed music, I'll go back. That was actually true. So that was my, and still that's been my line of inquiry that has led me to my PhD. I mean, the reason I did a PhD is a whole other story, but that was still the question. And I have discovered that some people have got partial answers, but they're still only partial answers. In fact, nobody knows the answer. So, that's leaping ahead. When I was young, but talking about crying, when I was young, my father in particular, who was the patriarchal head of our household, used to listen to protest music and classical music. That was his thing. And Judy Collins was one of his favourites, along with Joan Baez. And I really liked listening to the Judy Collins records because she is a fabulous singer from her Irish background, with really lyrical singer, and her guitar playing was really amazing as well. So, and I just, and she used to sing this particular song that I've now discovered was actually written by Tom Paxton about being stuck on a freeway and going around and around and not being able to actually get to where you want to go because the signs were so confusing.
Sounds like Melbourne. Yeah.
And it moved me it just moved me to tears. Like I would just cry and cry and cry and go, like, this is really, I guess it resonated with me in some particular way. So when my father said, it's time for you, well, I learnt recorder at school, like many Victorian kids did, and I really liked that. And then my father said, oh, it's time that you actually started to learn a proper instrument. What do you want to do? And I said, I want to be a folk singer. I want to be Judy Collins. I want to play the guitar and do that. And in his wisdom, he said, no, you can't do that. You have to learn proper music. So that's really how I got into classical music, because he's going, you can go off and you can learn to play a classical guitar. That's, you think you like guitar? Well, actually, this is... And actually, I really regret thinking, well, again, he didn't really ask my opinion. He'd asked my opinion. He'd overridden it. And yet if he had actually said, well, you have to learn a like classical type instrument, I would have chosen to play the flute or even to keep on with the recorder or do a whole lot of classical guitar. Really, really boring. It's just like... So... these days I think it's much more interesting and I kind of understand it better, but at that time it was like really, really boring. So, and anyway, so time goes on and I'm doing that, and I do remember I can't remember why we were having this conversation, but I know when, by the time I was in about Form 5, my father was going, don't think you can make a career out of being a musician. I don't even know why he even thought that, like why he even thought to say that. It might be because he decided that I was going to do music, practical music, playing guitar as a year 6, Form 12, whatever, Form 6, year 12 subject, which I did. And because, as I said, he was the boss of the house. And anyway, in his wisdom, there were several good things about my father, is that he thought that I was expected that I would go to university. I came from that type of middle class background, and I expected I would go to university. His idea was that I should study something that I would be able to rely on to earn an income if I needed to do that. So he decided I should study economics, and I did. I found economics is actually quite interesting in itself, but I got really bored, so I ended up studying mathematics and statistics to keep myself amused, because even though I wanted to drop out because it was so boring, he said, no, you can't drop out, you have to finish. So I did, and I was lucky enough to be able to live at home, and I used to work in the summer holidays, but I didn't have to work otherwise. So that was that particular this is kind of important, because that's kind of been a thread through my adult life, that I've always actually had to support myself one way or another. And at the university, so I was going to university in 1971. No, that's when I finished school, in 72, and that's when I was first in Form 6. My maths teacher used to talk about women's liberation. She would turn up. She would turn up and talk about women's liberation in our maths class. And
how did she work that in with 1 + 1 = 2?
Somehow she managed. Not very much, but just enough to be like really interested, like curiosity. And so that really piqued my interest in that. And when I went to university, I got involved with the Women's Liberation Club and did a few things. And that's when abortion, like the whole abortion thing, was running rampant in Victoria. So there was a lot of stuff happening around that, and also about beauty pageants, which was interesting. And so trying to find books and things, that was a bit of a thing. So part of this part of so this is another part of my story is that after I graduated, I did actually get work in an insurance company, but I was getting more and more interested in women's liberation and wanting to do something to change the, like, I've always been interested in politics. I was really involved in student politics when I was at university, and I was just really, really wanting, I was really scared of the hairy-legged radical feminists, and so I wouldn't go anywhere near the Women's Liberation Centre in Melbourne. But I was like really, 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 really curious, and of course I've actually turned into one of those, so that's which just makes me chuckle. And as I did eventually turn into one of those, and we had was very much influenced by a lot of the communist kind of principles that we're working for the common good of the common woman. And so classical music, which was my background, didn't really have a place there. We were supposed to be singing folk songs and rousing marching songs and all of that sort of stuff. And that's kind of where between my own and so I put my interest in classical music to one side because I was doing that. And these days we call it art music. I'll just explain what that is. Technically, classical music is a period of music that's around 1700, 1800s, where Mozart, for example, was writing his music. He writes classical music because of its elegance and its style and its balance and things. And there are other eras in music. Romantic music, which is in the 19th century, is something that I'm particularly fond of myself. And it's not just it's not terribly romantic. There is romantic, but it's not. But it's very lush and extravagant, and it makes you cry. I had put my interests to art music to one side until I turned 35, and I'm going, I'm really passionate about. I'm actually really intrigued by the ideas of music, like I was talking about before. And I think one of the things that I've gone back to thinking about now, because I feel like I'm still struggling to have the confidence to express my really deepest ideas in music. Another question, is that when I was just after I'd finished my economics degree, I was talking to an unknown woman. And I happened to be in the rainforest in Queensland, and for me that was the most moving experience, having grown up in dry old Victoria that has no trees and nothing, no life in it really. I know it does have in other parts, but like in general, definitely in Melbourne. I'm going, this rainforest is amazing, and there's these giant snake skeletons and the wind and the mountains, and you can see forever and the fresh air. And I just... for the first time, that was really the first time I went, I wish I could write some music about this. And that was kind of like this little glimmer. And I happened to be talking to this unknown woman, and I said, I wish, and for some reason, I just said that out loud to her. And she said, you could do that. That was the first time that somebody actually said to me, you could actually do that. And I went to myself, I haven't got the slightest idea how I could do that at all. So that's... And so time passes and I roll in my composition class to answer the question about why music is so moving. And of course we have to write music, and I'm going, I've got no idea how to do that. I don't know how to do that. It's just, I'm here for you to teach me. That's not to sit down and do something. So that's, and I did say, you asked me somewhere about philosophy. So in the economics part of my life, which I did research and policy work, is that I actually went back and I actually did a master's degree in economics because I got a scholarship to do it, and it was a handy way to get some money. I already had questions about economics because they were always talking about the rational man, the economic man, and I'm kind of going, well, yeah, and yeah, what about women? And I studied, as part of my master's degree, I did a unit called History of Economic Thought, and that was really about the best subject I ever studied in economics. It was fantastic talking about the theories about what it is that motivates men to do things, how economics is involved with politics and democracy or not democracy, how markets theorised about how they work, and, well, that we already had that in economics, but where those theories came from and how they developed out of philosophy and things like that. And that was, as I said, that was really fascinating. I was just fascinated that that's my interest. And I think the other thing about my father is that he always taught me to question everything. That was, except him, that's just powerless. But question everything. So that was that.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's fascinating. Could you explain about fuzzy logic principles?
Okay, now we're getting into real stuff. So I feel, I'm going to say, this is really embarrassing. I actually feel like my doctoral research and my thesis is probably the most creative thing I've ever actually done. So fuzzy logic was invented in 1990. The word fuzzy logic was invented in 1993 by Professor Zadeh, who's an Iranian-American computer scientist. And it is actually, the term is actually a conflation of two different things. One is about the concept of fuzziness, and one is, and fuzziness is actually the idea that everything is on a spectrum. So we'll go back to Aristotle and we'll go back to mathematics, which is that Aristotle, when he formulated his principles of mathematics, is that he had, or his laws of mathematics, that the law of the excluded middle, that you have something is true or it is false. It can't be anywhere in between. So there's no middle. There's actually no middle. It is at one end. And that's really the principle of computer programming, with the ones and zeros. So if something is true, it's a one. And if it's not true, then it's a zero. So this is me going back into my ancient history when I was first working in the insurance company, for example. We had to run computer programs. There would be a, I'm going to call it a typing pool, but it's not the technical name, where there would be a whole rows and rows of women and they would be punching cards to put into the computer, and what they would be punching is the ones and the zeros in the right place to get the programs to run. That's, so that's, and computers still actually work on that principle of ones and zeros, except for quantum mechanics. We'll just, quantum computers, we won't go there for now. That's just, anyway, so this is actually the thing. So there, so the idea of fuzziness is that things are on a spectrum, and if we take one of the Greek philosophers who would say, well, if you've got a pile of sand and you move one grain of sand to the another place where there's no grains, at what point do you say that that pile doesn't exist, or there is, like, there's two, at what point has it actually moved as it's gradual? So that, I found that a kind of really fascinating kind of concept, and it fits very much with my feminist philosophy of that everything is on a spectrum, I suppose. And I'm trying not to go there, but the obvious, for me, the obvious thing is, like, there's sexuality and there's masculinity and femininity, and even in politics, there's no absolute. There's no absolute truth about anything. So that's, so that's, so I was really intrigued. And then the logic part is that if you start breaking Aristotle's laws of mathematics, and you go, actually, there is a middle, because all the other laws of mathematics that we're taught in school and university are based on the principle of the excluded middle, like. And so suddenly, if you've got a middle, traditional mathematics doesn't work anymore. So the logic is, the actually, it doesn't work anymore. So the logic is how you try and work that, how you try and work that out. Like, find a different system that can actually cope with the fact that there are middles, and not just one middle, but a whole infinite number of middles, actually. That's just...
Yeah, well, there's a lot between one and zero, a half, three quarters, a quarter, five eighteenths. Yeah, you're right. It is infinite.
So I first heard about fuzzy logic when I was – so as I go along, I did my degree in composition. I didn't learn about how – there's various strands to this. So I didn't learn about how music actually moves people. I learned about different theories about how you can actually compose music to make it sound in different ways and some type of suggestive thing about whether my work was good or not good or something. And off we go. And then I actually moved interstate. I went to Wollongong, and by that stage I had decided that I wasn't going to study music anymore. I needed to focus on writing music and actually doing things. And I got to Wollongong, and it was kind of like this weird thing happened out of the cosmos, and this socialist feminist turned out, came along, and she said, "We need more feminists at the university. If you do a research degree, you don't have to pay any fees." And I'm going, "Oh, well, here I am in Wollongong and I don't really quite know what I'm doing with myself." And And so she took me for a tour around the university, and I did some investigating, and I'm going, "Well, actually, that's true. And I'm sort of here thinking I'll write music and trying to make a life for myself." And so I enrolled in a master's degree. I actually thought that I would like to do a PhD. That was my plan. And I went to the university and I said, "I'd like to do a PhD." And thinking, "I've already got a master's degree, I'll look." And they said, because I was really interested in learning about electronic, doing more study in electronic music, they said, "You don't know much about that, so off you go and do a master's degree in electronic music composition." So I did that. And And by then, a friend had more or less abandoned the university because she was finding the whole thing of postgraduate study is a minefield, as I think everybody discovers one way or another. The minefield, she'd kind of wandered off and left the minefield behind and was just working at home, so didn't see much of her. And then I thought, well, I've done my master's degree. Actually, my goal is to do a PhD, so I enrolled in that. And that was a whole other story, because that didn't really answer. In my master's degree, one of the things, like, I'm really interested in technology and I am really interested in electronic music and I am really interested in experimental music. I'm really interested in trying to push boundaries. I think that's really, no matter where it is. And the closest I got in my master's degree was that one of the assignments I had to do was, or suggested to do, was that I go off and listen to a whole bunch of electronic music and decide what, and just listen to it, kind of become familiar with it. And what I did, so I ended up listening to about 100 pieces of music and making notes about what it was that was in the music, I'll say, that spoke to me, that kind of either held my interest or went, "This is really boring," and what I thought about it and stuff. And that was really that was really fascinating, listening to it like that. Somewhere, when I talk about music, I can talk about it endlessly. So somewhere in all of this, in music composition and in music in general, we are taught music analysis, which is like listening to music to identify things. That's part of it. But the other part is actually looking at scores. With electronic music, you can't look at scores. All you can do is listen to it. So that's a really fascinating thing, is kind of looking at music scores and going, "Oh, it's in F sharp minor and it's in F sharp minor, and then it modulates to A major, and then it modulates back to F sharp minor and maybe C sharp minor, and then it has to finish in F sharp minor and everybody feels happy because it's come to a proper conclusion and it's just... And how does it do that?
Excuse my ignorance. What is a music score?
It is a piece. It is paper. So a piece of music. So it's actually a document, a paper document that has got notes written on it, like so that when, so that somebody else can play the music. So it's got, when I say notes, it's got music dots. It's got dots on it, on lines. And various notations on it that will tell you what instruments are going to, the music's been designed for it to play that music. It will also tell you about the rhythm the music's going to be in. It will also tell you how fast the music is supposed to be. It will also tell you which parts of the music to play loudly or softly, which notes to really emphasize in the rhythm. And it's just a dog, it's, so it's a page. We're used to reading books with words on it, so it's just their pages that have got this particularly kind of coded information about what to do. Like if you're a musician, if you're looking for something to play, then you can find a score and it's got all this coded information that you need to know how to actually decode the information to play the music. That's
right. Okay. Yeah.
I suppose it's
this. Yes.
And as thank you, Beth, because I think it's really easy to forget. But it's really easy to forget that people don't know all those things. So that's,
well, that's right. I mean, if you haven't studied music, yeah, and you just like listening to it, there's a lot of things that here you don't realise that sort of, you know, a lot goes into actually composing music and then playing it as well. I assume if you had two music scores and you gave them to two different people, would they sort of put different angles on that or would it be exactly the same?
I don't think, personally, don't think that two people can play the music identically. I think it's impossible. But it depends on their teachers, and traditionally it would be that the score is God. Like you have to do your best to actually reproduce it as accurately as possible. But that's also why some performers, I'm talking about art music in particular, but it follows through on popular music as well. Why, like you can hear a cover version of a song that you know and you go, oh, I really like that cover version because they've done something to it. They've got different instruments or just the tone of their voice or the way they emphasise different words. And so that's actually why different performers, even in the art music world, get to be quite famous or not famous because the way they play the music. I'm thinking about André Rieu, that everybody, I'll say in my world, goes, oh, he just plays popular stuff that everybody loves, because there's a whole snobbishness about art music, which is, it's really, really bothers me. He just plays popular music, and yet he's got millions and millions of people love the way that he does it. He's a showman. He plays waltzes and all the music that people love to listen to, and romantic violin music. That's just...
It's a particular style. Well, thanks very much for coming onto the program today.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I've been speaking with Dr. Wendy Suter about fuzzy logic principles. And this is part one of a two-part interview.